Hi there, it's Melvin. Just wanted to take a moment to thank the team over at Thrizer for supporting this month's podcast sessions. Thrizer is a payment platform that you have to check out if you are a private pay therapist and accepting out-of-network benefits. It basically helps clients save on therapy upfront. Thrizer can help verify a client's out-of-network benefit ahead of the first session so that they get transparency up front on what their out-of-pocket costs will be. I'll tell you more about Thrizer here in the middle of our session, but if you go to sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, you actually and then enter the code STC upon sign up, you get your first $2,500 in fees waived. Again, that's over at sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, and be sure to enter the promo code STC. So we'll jump right into today's podcast session. Hey there, welcome to session 61 of Selling the Couch. I know that there are a lot of Denver Broncos fans in the Selling the Couch community and folks who listen to the podcast. This is a little hard for me to say, but I'll say it. Congratulations on your win. Well, I'm a huge Cowboys fan, as you probably know, and I kind of wanted the Carolina Panthers to win. But that being said, I am very happy for Peyton Manning, and I'm a huge DeMarcus Ware fan. He used to play for my Cowboys, and now he plays for the Broncos, and I'm so happy for him that he was able to get a Super Bowl ring. Oh, and Wade Phillips was the coach of the Cowboys at one point. So I'm really happy. He's got a crazy story. He's been coaching for 40 years, and this was the first time that he won a Super Bowl ring. You're in for a treat with today's podcast. My guest today is Dr. Agnes Wainman. Agnes is a super active member of the Selling the Couch Facebook community. By the way, you guys should definitely join if you haven't had a chance. We're at 953 members. There are just some amazing conversations about private practice building and how to do all sorts of other things, from building courses to workshops and how do you do this and what's working, what's not. It's just amazing conversations. You can join at sellingthecouch.com/community. But Agnes created this post at the beginning of January that went kind of viral in our community, meaning that, let me look right now, it had close to 200 interactions, meaning likes or comments of some kind. And I wanted to start today's session just by reading a part of that, of what Agnes wrote. She wrote, "Growing a practice can seem elusive for many of us and can feel a bit mysterious. I wanted to share a very transparent post that hopefully others find helpful. Exactly 1 year ago today, I had 7 clients booked for the week. This was after being in practice a little over a year, a fair amount of going to networking groups, trying to do things outside of the box, like hosting an open house, signing up for a booth in a woman's lifestyle show, and blogging. I had spent a lot of money on Google AdWords to bring clients with minimal ROI. To say that I was frustrated would be the understatement of the year. I would see posts from people about being full in 6 months, earning 6 figures in the first year, and would feel like the biggest loser ever. And now it's a year later, and I have 21 people booked, by choice, as seeing more is not doable for me. What changed for me in the last 12 months? How's that for a cliffhanger? Today's podcast is actually all about what did change for Agnes and the things that she started to do differently. So here is my conversation with Dr. Agnes Wainman from londonps.ca. Hey Agnes, welcome to Selling the Couch.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited.
I'm pretty excited as well. You know, I'm excited for our conversation because one of the things that made me, for us to be able to touch bases, you know, last week in the Selling the Couch Facebook community, you wrote this really, like, it was so human, the post about your own journey this past year, what you learned. And I was like, man, there are so many folks that could really benefit from just learning from you.
Yeah, and that post for me was very meaningful as well. I think that, you know, I was a little bit worried about kind of putting some of the mess out there into the world, but the response to it was so incredible. And I just kind of felt like, people need to hear this stuff. And that just felt so nice that my risk paid off.
Yeah, I think it helps that we're in the profession that we're in as well.
Well, and I mean, the Facebook group itself is just so lovely and warm and supportive. So it's like, well, if I'm going to let it all hang out, it might as well be there.
Well, I'm really glad you did because I could just tell, like, I got messages from people about that post. Like, I could just see the interactions, and I was like, man, this is really like impacting people. You know, one of the first questions that I wanted to ask you was in reference to that post, like, what are like three strong assumptions that you had about how to build a private practice when you first started?
Yeah, so when I was in grad school, that was private practice was always my focus. Anytime we would go around and talk about what we wanted to do once we graduated, I was always the private practice, while other people, were talking about hospital jobs and maybe a little bit of private practice. And then straight out of grad school, I worked in two other private practices for 3 years. So I got to be exposed to two very successful established practices. So one of the assumptions I had was this can be done. Other people have done it, and why not me? But I think there was a bit of an overconfidence issue there because I figured, I would put up a website and I would go meet some people and then my private practice would be awesome. So I kind of had this idea of this is going to work, but I don't think I really at the beginning realized how many pieces needed to be in place but before I got to that stage.
I think you assume correctly. A website is probably an essential part, but what are some of those things that maybe you didn't anticipate, would lead to actually starting to build out a private practice?
Well, and this is probably not going to come to a bit as a surprise to you because in my post, I specifically talked about having a niche and an ideal client. But that was something that was not in my original vision because I came from two successful generalist practices. So we kind of saw anyone who came through the door. So my first website was very general. I had this tagline, which I was just looking over last week, and I was like, oh my gosh, it was so vague. It was like care and guidance for increased well-being and understanding. It's like, what does
Sounds
that
amazing.
mean? And I remember I agonized over that tagline. And it's like, now looking back, it's like, well, of course I agonized over it. It sucked. It like said nothing.
Right. It said a lot without saying nothing.
Yeah. So, and again, this is where I take a lot of leaps. And then after I take the leap, I'm just like, maybe I should have thought that out a little bit because I had a professional web designer make my first website because it was really important to me to have a professional looking website. But I think I was too focused on it looking pretty than the content. I had these amazing stock photos of these like really happy looking people, but it really wasn't saying much.
Does that
Go ahead.
translate over? Like, I guess I imagine this would, but like regular stock photos versus like having really good content. Well, actually, let me take a step back. So when you say like really good content, what do you mean by that?
Well, something that would actually speak to the people I wanted to work with. And now, being fair to myself, at that point, I wasn't even really clear as to who I wanted to work with. I wanted a full practice. And again, I knew it could be done because I had worked in full practices, but I think I was looking at it from, again, these practices that I had worked in were had been around for about 10 years. They had well-established reputation, very established referral sources, and they were doing things differently than I'm doing them now, but it works for them. So I think that's also really important for people to understand and really be okay with is you need to find what works for you.
Yeah. Well, and I think you're bringing up a really good point, which is I think sometimes, like, I think it's a good thing to model our practices after people who are doing it well. But I think sometimes we look at a practice and we see what they're doing and they're like on chapter 10 of the book, right? Where we're on chapter one, right? And we make the assumption like their chapter 10 should be our chapter one.
Yeah. And I think that's also one of the motivations for that post in the Facebook group, because I remember being a few months and I was reading everything I could about private practice and checking out all of these amazing resources that are out there about private practice building. And it was really, really helpful, but I think also at times disheartening, because there would be those occasional like, oh, I was full in 6 months, or I was making six figures in the first year, and just kind of feeling like, well, there must be something wrong with me because that is not my experience.
Right. I just feel like a lot of people struggle with that.
Yeah, because again, just like, even in our real personal lives, social media, you know, people typically put out their successes and the good stuff that's happening in their lives. So I think a lot of times we see people's successes, which is amazing and very inspiring, but we may not actually see the messy middle.
So just kind of summing it up. So the first thing was that you were thinking, this can be done, why not me? It was almost like an overconfidence. The second thing was that you thought about being more of a generalist and that you didn't think about like kind of niching down. And then what was like a third assumption that you had?
And again, then that idea of just, I wanted things, again, in terms of the website, you know, I was thinking more about making things pretty and making things, you know, I focused on probably the wrong things at the beginning, that really didn't have that foundation of who I wanted to be working with. So what I was doing was essentially, you know, throwing spaghetti against the wall and hoping something would stick. So even during my first year, I was running very expensive AdWord campaigns. I was going to all sorts of networking events. I even paid, again, a lot of money to have a booth at a women's lifestyle show. So I was doing all of these things without having that foundation of who do I actually want to work with. Again, I was kind of five steps ahead of where I really was.
Yeah. Once you narrowed down, I guess even like, what did that look like? How did you decide to serve the population that you work with?
So after probably about a year or so, I realized, okay, this is really not working the way that I wanted it to be working. And I was feeling pretty distressed and beating myself up and kind of would have some, you know, my regular freak out that I'd be the reason for my family's financial ruin. And again, I kept coming back. I think I took a webinar with Kelly and Miranda about finding a niche. And it was like, okay, I've heard about this niching thing, the ideal client, about 20 times. Like, maybe this is something I need to start actually taking seriously. So my niche is overwhelmed, worried women. And I have sub-specialties in maternal mental health and infertility. So I kind of sat down and kind of wrote out, you know, who were the clients that I just loved working with? The clients that really just kind of had randomly come into my practice just through fate, because I sure wasn't appealing to them through my copy. And then I started developing this, again, I know in previous podcasts, you've talked about developing this avatar of your ideal client. And it was similar for myself that I really, you know, brought this client to life for myself. And a piece of advice that I'd received from someone was, you know, sit down and write 150 things about your ideal client. You know, whether it's characteristics, personality, things that they do, places that they hang out. And that seemed like a lot of things to come up with for an ideal client. But as I started writing, it all just started coming out. And it was actually a really nice reference then when I did go to redo my entire website by myself, because I knew that there was no way to kind of just rehab my current website. So I just started from scratch, and I had this list of 150 things, words that I could use in my copy, blog post ideas, and it was like this living, breathing document that just became the foundation for everything that I was doing.
You know, it sounds like such a simple exercise, but I could totally see how that is so powerful, because like the things that you write down in those 150 words, it I would imagine it guides like every decision you make, in both in terms of like where you advertise, what kind of copy you have, you know, what kind of folks you reach out to as sort of potential referral sources. What have you found? Like how has it impacted you?
It's made all the difference in the world, because every blog post that I write about, within the first 5 minutes of sitting down to write it, I know whether it's going to work and to appeal to my client, ideal client, or to just give it up right then and there. I probably have 20 files of unfinished blog posts that will likely never see the light of day because they don't speak to my ideal client.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, because I think sometimes you sit down and then it ends up like the things that we write don't end up, you know, actually being put on the website. But sometimes you have to write those to get to a point where you are speaking to your ideal client.
Yeah. And I mean, I knew that I was really onto something when all of a sudden I started getting clients who said things like, I read your blog post about being an anxious overachiever, and I was like, why is this woman living in my head? Or, you know, you wrote this blog post about fill in the blank, and I swear I was just talking to my girlfriends about this, but I wasn't really sure what was going on. Or, you know, I sent my blog, your blog post to my husband, and now he totally gets me so much better.
Wow. It's so beautiful, right? Like, wow.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I don't think there's any way you can do that without having that foundation of these are the people that I am meant to serve, that I am meant to work with. Because if you read my first blog posts, and so I started blogging maybe 4 or 5 months into having my practice, but since I didn't have that foundation, they were lame. Like, it was this like mishmash, you know, still somewhat academic sounding, kind of stuffy, you know, those blog posts that were forced into life versus just having that inspiration and feeling like, yes, this is totally going to speak to her.
Yeah, because I mean, I think even like it's a different energy, right? Writing that kind of a blog post. And I think it carries through in the words.
Yeah. And even over the holidays, I was reading Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert, and she talks a lot about creativity and inspiration. And she talks about how there's, you know, all of these ideas floating around in the universe. And sometimes you'll connect with one of those ideas and you just know you have to run with it. So I think for me, that's now how I create content, is when I feel, again, almost like colliding with some sort of mystical force, which I know sounds a little bit woo-woo, but it's how I roll, that I kind of know within the first few minutes as to whether it's going to work for me and my clients, or if it's like, nope, that's probably someone else's idea that someone else can bring to fruition in a much better way than I can.
Right. So, you know, one of the things that you said earlier was that like you spend like all this crazy money going, having a table, doing Google AdWords, all these things. So now, since you've had this like perspective of seeing what your ideal client is, what their qualities are, how has that impacted the marketing and the getting the word out about your services?
So I don't run Google AdWords anymore, first and foremost. And again, it's nothing against the Google AdWords itself. It was a very successful campaign in that it drove traffic to my website. But then the website, and again, I've been blogging a little bit about my private practice journey. And, you know, it's like I paid all this money to send people to this like beige wonderland of mediocrity. Mm. So it wasn't anything to do with that. Google AdWords, those did what they were supposed to do. They sent traffic to my website. But then once people got there, it's just like, I'm going to leave now.
Right, because there wasn't anything that like fully resonated with them.
Yeah. So in terms of the marketing that I do now, I am a lot more picky as to what I do. And actually, I'm trying to think, and I don't do any really paid marketing at this point in time. I'll occasionally do some Facebook ads to build my list or to let people know about events that I will be attending or running. But other than that, it has kind of evolved quite organically. So I have my practice Facebook page, and I don't blog as much. I actually went to a blogging conference back in October, only to realize that I was a little burnt out from blogging. Mm. So now I'm a vlogger. So I do videos once a week. So right now that's where I'm creating a lot of content.
Nice. So, do you like transcribe those videos, or do you just have them on your website?
The transcription is on my list of to-dos to actually outsource that, which is also a big step for me, because I'm kind of shifting out of that idea of needing to do everything myself.
Oh, I'm working on that as well.
Because, you know, transcribing videos is a lot of work and takes a lot of time. And again, as I've evolved as a private practice owner, you know, I've become a little bit more selective as to how do I spend my time versus what things can I outsource to people that are probably A, much better at it, and B, is just a better use of my own time and resources.
And the advantage of transcription is that you actually get words, so you can rank for those words.
Yeah. Right? So, and I started a YouTube channel, again, because of my niches. Typically women who are quite burnt out. So I talk a lot about self-care. So I started a YouTube channel called The Self-Care Activist, where, again, I just speak to my ideal clients about self-care. And so I put those up on my Facebook page and those get shared. And I think very important as well in terms of my private practice journey is I have found an amazing support network for myself. And I think going back to when I first started my practice, I was kind of doing it all on my own. My husband was probably the only one who really knew just how overwhelmed and stressed out I was. And once I started actually letting people in, and again, through a lot of my support network is people I've met in therapist Facebook groups. And now that I have a team of people who kind of love me and support me, and I can do that for them, I think that has also made a significant shift.
Yeah, I just think one of the hardest and easiest things to realize about owning a small business is, like, I think especially for many of us, we are naturally high achievers and perfectionists, and letting go of that and relying like on the support of a community.
Yeah. So this summer, actually, so I attended a Most Awesome conference back in May, which was also a significant shift for me, both in terms of kind of the things that I learned, the connections that I made. But I think, you know, it was flying from London, Ontario to San Diego and being away from my family for a few days and really hunkering down. So I think that was a shift for me. Like, I'm taking this so seriously. I'm investing in myself. I am, you know, flying into another country. like, this is something that I'm taking so seriously. And that's where I met a lot of my support people. And then some of the therapists that I'd met in that experience, you know, in the summer, we all write a book together about money blocks, which is something, you know, for a lot of therapists, we have a lot of money stuff. So working through a book about money blocks and money shame and some of the struggles that we have in a supportive, safe group was also just changed everything in terms of how I saw my business and my own relationship with money.
Just from the conference, like, what was like one key insight that you had that maybe you didn't realize about yourself or just about the business before?
There are so many powerful moments, which was evidenced by, like, I cried on Julie Hanks, like, but I remember we did this one exercise with Jo Muirhead, and she made us stand up and say, I give people back their lives. And it was all about knowing our worth and the important work that we do, and to actually be standing up and saying, I give people back their lives was like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like I'm having, like, I can just feel it, you know?
Again, there was a lot of crying at that conference.
I think a lot of healing, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, I think so much of maybe what we as private practitioners struggle with is a lot of the mindset work. You know, I think that for a lot of us, we're all either have master's degrees or PhDs and are constantly learning about our clinical work, our businesses. We're smart. We can figure the practical stuff out. But sometimes what's holding us back is the mindset, kind of the gremlins that say, who do you think you are? Why do you think that you can have a successful business? Why do you think that you can have a great life?
Yeah, sometimes it doesn't come easy, I think, to people that are like, you know, generally most of us are like caring people and kind-hearted people. And the thought that, you know, we can offer something that people pay for.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I don't have any research to back this up, but just in terms of being in graduate school and now connecting with so many other therapists, you know, A, we're all humans, so we all have our stuff, we all have our issues. But I think a lot of us do struggle with self-worth and feeling that we can do amazing things. And often a lot of the decisions we make come from a place of anxiety. So, you know, to anyone who is struggling with their private practice, I would suggest, you know, whether it's doing your own therapy, whether it's doing peer-to-peer kind of consultation, whether it's just kind of doing your own personal growth, reading things, talking about things, that is probably much more important than which, you know, electronic health record system to use.
Yeah, it's a lot more long-lasting as well. Agnes, the time just like flew by, but I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. And I think one of the things that I most appreciate about you is how open and just vulnerable you are. I think these things that, like, it's what we were talking about right before we started to talk. I feel like these are things that we don't talk about as clinicians. You know, we see the surface, you know, the successes, but we don't often talk about the struggles to get there.
And again, we all have them. I'm a big fan of Brené Brown's work, which we had been earlier talking about. And, you know, she kind of talks about how the messy middle, that's where the magic happens. And I think talking about our messy middle, again, once we've, you know, processed it, because you probably don't want to be talking about your messy middle like when you're in it. Again, I think that will be so helpful for just all of us as human beings, all of us as private practice owners, and just kind of normalizing some of the struggles that we all go through.
Yeah, absolutely. Agnes, what are some of the best ways that folks can touch base with you?
So they can check out my website. It's www.londonps.ca. So it's London Psychological Services. And there you can find my social media links for my Facebook page and my Twitter. On YouTube, they can find me at The Self-Care Activist. Every Monday, I do a video. And one of the new projects that I'm working on is because of this post and because of just the response and the experience for me is at the end of January 2016, I'll be launching blissfulpractice.com, where I will be blogging about my own journey and hopefully helping other people, again, just normalizing what kind of can go into our private practice journey. And so that'll be blissfulpractice.com.
Awesome. I will be sure to link to it and looking forward to reading the blog.
Thank you.
Take good care.
Thanks, Melvin.
Hey, what's up? Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Agnes. This was one of those sessions where I was like trying to interview Agnes while trying to take my own notes. Anyway, I hope you found it so helpful. I thought that we could end by me reading the rest of her blog post just so that we can kind of come full circle. So here we go. What changed in the last 12 months? I finally embraced the niche. I completely redesigned my website from this generic, trying to appeal to everyone, appeal to no one, to a website meant for my clients. I invested in going to the most awesome conference. Shout out to Joe, Kelly, Miranda, and Julie. Hiring an SEO consultant, went to a blogging conference only to realize I wanted to focus less on blogging. I made listening to podcasts such as this a priority. I networked more strategically. I actually started paying attention to my finances, then ostriching in terror. I shifted my money mindset in major ways through hard, painful work. I found my tribe. These are the things that everyone can do. There is nothing special or spectacular about me. If you're struggling right now, please know that it can happen for you. I double pinky swear. Agnes, I just wanted to thank you so much for coming on the podcast, for your courage and your vulnerability. I think it just speaks to the person you are, and I just know that your clients are in amazing hands with you. Show notes to today's episode can be found at sellingthecouch.com/session and the number 6-1. And Agnes is actually in the process of providing private practice building and consulting services, and you can find that at blissfulpractice.com. And again, Agnes's psychotherapy website is at londonps.ca. Have a great week, and I will see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Selling the Couch podcast. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit www.sellingthecouch.com.
So if you've been listening to the STC podcast for a while, or you've been listening to podcasts and you've had this thought of, Mel, I would love to launch my own podcast in order to grow my business, just wanted to encourage you to check out our free podcasting workshop, which is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop. You can basically sign up at a day and a time that works for you. It's 90 minutes. And when I do these workshops or when I record them, I truly believe in quality teaching, so it's going to be well worth your time. We're going to go through gear recommendations and how to launch strategically and how to think about monetizing your podcast and how to line up your podcast with your existing offers and how to do it strategically and authentically and not salesy and slimy and all of those things. So again, the link is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop.